So who's better to make decisions about your child? You or the professionals in your child's public school? Lori Gimmelstein of the Colorado Parent Advocacy Network foolishly believes you, the parent, need to know what your kid is being taught. I'm John Caldera. This is the audio version of our show, Devil's Advocate. You can watch that program by going to our YouTube channel, IITV. That stands for Independence Institute TV. Please share and subscribe to this podcast. Enjoy. Lori Gimmelstein thinks parents should have a right to, well, decide what's best for their kids. She runs an organization called Colorado Parents Advocacy Network, CPAN, and she's been working on this transsexual issue. I'm just curious, why do you care?
I care very much for the incredible bond that a parent has with their child. And in 2020, my husband and I were sitting at the dinner table with our two kiddos, who at the time were 11 and 13. And remember, 2020 was a really fun time. 21.
Good time for kids.
Yeah, it was great. They were
isolated, alone, not educated. Yes.
And they were going back to school in late 2020, early 21, with twice a week, small cohorts, groups of people. And our daughter, who was 11, came home and she shared with us that her friend, who, and I won't share names right now, but her friend who was female was now going to be male, and that her friend was going to be using he, his, him pronouns and using the boys' room. And honestly, my very first thought was, I must have missed the email, right? Because that's something that's pretty heavy for an 11-year-old. It's very rare. Well, it was in 2020. And I just thought, clearly I missed the email on this. And so I just commented, that's really progressive of this child's parents to ask the school to do a workshop. And Jenny said, oh, no, mommy. My friend goes home every day as a girl. His parents have no idea. And that was the beginning of the questioning that I started to have as a parent in the Cherry Creek School District. And just a couple weeks later, our son, who was in eighth grade, had an assignment and he asked me for some help on it. So I went up to his room and sat down at his desk. And the assignment was, why is your favorite hobby racist? Why?
I'm sorry. Yeah. You're kidding me.
No.
This was a serious question.
He was writing about anti-racism in skiing.
Did you say something like, well, the answer is because when you're a member of the Klan, everything is racist.
It was just so unbelievable to me. And looking at the rubric, he had to write racist against people of color to get full points. And what was so alarming...
Stop there. Yeah. In order for him to get credit, he had to use the words racist, people of color.
Yeah.
And he had to describe that something he was like doing, why it was racist, why he was an oppressor in this image of oppressed versus oppressor society that's being taught in schools.
Absolutely.
And I would have lost my stuff.
Well, I did. And I just said to Chris, I said, if you'll get an F on this assignment before you lie. And he said, Mom, you don't understand. I have to think one way at home and another way at school. And Chris is the kid that he strives so hard to be the best academically.
Now, my kids went to Boulder Valley. Mm-hmm. They had the same sort
of stuff.
And you know, my daughter in grade school is talking about how she has to give her pronouns. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's like, what? And she said, yeah. And I said, well, your pronoun is Your Majesty. You're a princess, and you identify that way, and they have to respect that. She said, Dad, even if I can't do that, I have to behave, even though this is garbage. Mm-hmm. And she hated it, but she knew to shut the hell up because she wanted to do well in school.
Mm-hmm. And we're seeing that. We're seeing kids feel compelled that they have to behave and think and say certain things in
Let's take both of those examples. Mm-hmm. So your son is being compelled, coerced into admitting he is some sort of oppressor.
Correct.
At 13?
He was 13, eighth grade.
He has done a lot of oppression in those 13 years, let me tell you. He's quite the racist. But going back to your daughter's friend, who's a girl at home but a boy at school, isn't it possible that her parents are just not accepting and that the school is a safe place where she can finally be herself?
And I think that is where we see the biggest problem. The school is not the ultimate authority on making decisions for our children. We, the parents, are. We are the ones
what
that get to guide them.
What kind of old 1950s
them.
Idea is that?
I know it's absurd. State control is just great.
There is a sense that school is there to not only teach kids how to read and write and do arithmetic, which they don't do anymore, but that they're there to help kids become an integrated member of society. They're there to help kids, grow into society, understand society, and that's all they're doing here. And this is the new society, and we want to help kids that they don't harm themselves, they don't hurt themselves, they don't commit suicide. And if they are stifling their true identity, that can be very dangerous to them.
I disagree, and I think that parents and concerned citizens across the state and the nation also disagree with that tenet. And what should be happening if there is a concern is the very first person that should be contacted is that child's parent. Now, you will hear what you were just describing, this, well, what if that parent is abusive and they're going to murder that child if they find out that they're questioning their identity?
Or that the kid is going to hurt himself, or he's going to
and be if a child is
isolated,
going to,
that this is where kids who identify as a different gender can often hurt themselves and too often commit suicide. So all the state is trying to do, and let's remember schools are the state, is trying to keep those kids alive.
Well, they're not doing a great job with mental health, despite all of the government programs being put into place to protect children under the guise of helping support mental illness. We know that the best outcomes are for children when their parents are involved in their education. And the best outcomes are when parents and teachers partner for the best situation for each child.
But not every kid has involved parents like you and your hubby. A lot of kids have absentee parents, parents who don't care, or parents who quite often are just not accepting of their lifestyle. I mean, I remember growing up in the 80s, there were not the systems to help kids who are gay or lesbian be gay and lesbian. They were stuck in a closet. Do you want these kids to be stuck in a closet as well?
Well, what we're starting to see is almost the opposite trend. So, and this goes back to a little bit of what Chris was talking about with his with my son's assignment and this oppressor oppressed model. And what we're seeing is we're seeing just an incredible amount of students come out and identify as LGBT plus. And when my daughter was in seventh grade, 23 of her friends who are girls were now identifying as lesbian, bisexual, or transgender. So we're talking about 12-year-olds. And it was causing my daughter great stress and anxiety.
Over what?
What if tomorrow I wake up and I'm a boy? What if tomorrow I wake up?
Did she express that to you?
Yes. And I'm hearing this from multiple parents. So what we're doing under the guise of protecting children and keeping them safe is we're actually telling them that their parents can't be trusted. And we're telling children that the only person they should trust is the safe adult at school. And in working with child crimes investigator George Mumma from Jefferson County, he was saying in the thousands of cases involving child crimes, that it was always a safe adult that committed the crime. And here's where we have to reasonably come together and understand that there will be abuse of that term. Of course, we want our teachers to be safe people for our children to be around. But when children are told that they can't trust their parents, we have seen most recently in September of 2023, with the school board elections coming up, we were in a lot of elementary schools and middle schools at parents' nights so that we could talk to parents and talk to them about the upcoming school board elections. And we found posters in the elementary schools that said things like, in all uppercase letters, "My parents are great." And then in small letters, "At pointing out my faults, text talk to 38255, Colorado Crisis Line." And then there were some that said things like, "My good grades are never quite good enough. Text talk to 38255. And that was a little bit alarming to us because they're marketing this material to children ages 5 to 10.
What I'm hearing is there's a program to help stressed out kids. and what's wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're stressed out about your grades, or if you're having a problem at home, you need someone to talk to,
mm-hmm.
what's wrong with reaching out and trying to get some of that help?
I think what's wrong with it is that there's no oversight and accountability and transparency for it. And even further than that, in the state of Colorado, it is illegal for Colorado Crisis Line and the iMatter program to talk with children under the age of 12. The law.
Say that again.
So there is a law that came into the books that created a program called the iMatter program. It was brought in by Representative Michelson Janay, who's now a senator, in 2021. And it was brought in under the guise of helping mental health related to COVID. We had seen a marked decline in mental health with kids at home. They're not getting socialized. They're not with their peers. And they're lonely. And it's a really scary time. And, you know, that makes people feel good inside when you're here, oh, we're going to help kids. But that has transitioned. It's moved away from this, you know, mental health under the guise of COVID to the LGBTQ gender ideology, gender affirming care, and the concepts of safe adults. It's just this explosion of everything kind of coming together, and it's disastrous. And for example, we actually did this investigation, and we said we're going to work with a child crime investigator, and we're going to do an investigation of the system to see if it's really legit.
Right.
It's supposed to be confidential. Okay.
This is the text line.
Correct. And so I texted talk. You had a text talk to 38255. And I was going to pose as a 9-year-old. What we were trying to see is they're going to. We just immediately thought they would probably, you know, say no, we can't communicate with you because you're under the age of 12. We'd like to make sure that you have a parent involved. And so before I could get connected to a crisis specialist, which is a whole nother conversation, I was asked for my full name, my date of birth, my gender identity, and my zip code. And so I provided my name, my date of birth, my gender identity, and I said that I didn't know what a zip code was.
Oh.
And finally got my zip code by talking to my mom. And I came into the conversation and immediately was brought into a conversation with an adult that I didn't know but knows my name, knows my zip code, knows my birthday. And begins this conversation. You know, what brings you here today? How can I help you? Started off pretty pleasant. And ultimately what I ended up saying was, you know, I think that I'm trans, but I don't want my mom to find out. And the crisis specialist assured me that my mom would not find out, that they would keep it confidential, that I could be anything that I wanted to be. And then she directed me to an organization called the Trevor Project so that I could explore my queer identity. She then further went on to ask me if I wanted to kill myself because I felt that I was transgender. And I replied, why would I want to kill myself? And she said, because some people want to kill themselves when they have these feelings. And we just want to make sure.
Are you saying she shouldn't have asked that question?
I'm saying it was very inappropriate.
To ask, do you want to kill yourself?
Do you want to kill yourself? And not only that, she further pushed the issue, do you want to harm yourself? And I said, well, what do you mean by harm? And she said, well, sometimes people
like to do this when
yes.
they're like you.
And I said, like pinching? And she said, yes, yes. Do you do that? And I said, no, but I have a friend that does that. And, you know, we had this conversation and ultimately we actually did this routine multiple times and recorded everything. So we did this investigation as an 11-year-old with different issues.
Right.
And what the ultimate issue that we had was that we had a crisis specialist talking and giving guidance to a 9-year-old. And that's against the law.
Right. So what your frustration here, I want to really be clear. Are you saying that kids who feel like they belong in a different body should not transition?
I'm saying that that should be a family decision and not the decision of the state and not the decision of a school. And we have
So if a 9-year-old wants to be a different gender,
mm-hmm.
do you believe it is the parent that has the final call or the kid?
The parent.
Why?
Because that parent is charged with raising and guiding that child. And when I think about children, and I'm a speech-language pathologist, I've spent the last couple of decades immersed in development, childhood development, and we know that children are notoriously known for making decisions that aren't always the best for them.
There's a reason mm-hmm. why kids can't vote, they can't drive cars, they can't buy guns, they can't get married, they can't start a business, they can't rent a hotel room, mm-hmm. because their minds aren't fully formed yet.
Correct.
I get that. Mm-hmm. The issue is so touchy. And by bringing up these questions, mm-hmm. I'm sure you've been labeled as a hater.
I have, yeah.
Because, you know, I've done the same thing. I see it from a different point of view, mm-hmm. in that my kids are almost through the system, mm-hmm. and they have to deal with all this stuff. I get tired of the forced, coercive language that people have to state things that are obviously false in order to keep their job, mm-hmm. in order to stay in school. Mm-hmm. No, you have to use this language. You have to call that man a woman, mm-hmm. even though that's not the case. Mm-hmm. And so you have to lie publicly, mm-hmm. in order to keep your job. Mm-hmm. I find this North Korean-style dictatorship tyranny. This is just mm-hmm. awful. It is the opposite of free speech.
Absolutely.
It is coerced speech. And in order to keep your job, in order to stay in school, in order not to be called a racist, you have to lie. And
our children are taught not to lie.
But it's a big
problem.
It's so difficult for a kid to be able to swim in those seas and stand up to giants, adults, and all the other cultural pushes that say, no, we celebrate this. Mm-hmm. You know, both of us know Erin Lee, mm-hmm. great lady whose kid was invited to a art club after school, which was a trans indoctrination session, where she was told, yeah, well, if you're not 100% comfortable in your own body, you're trans.
Correct.
And fortunately, you know, 11-year-old girls are all very comfortable in their bodies. It's a standard. Nobody's comfortable in their body. And the thing that scared me the most is when she was told, don't tell your parents. Raising kids, that is the trigger mm-hmm. that we have taught our kids. When someone says, don't tell your parents, you tell your parents. Mm-hmm. And to think that it's not a predator on the street saying it, mm-hmm. it is predators inside the system mm-hmm. saying it. And when I say predators, I'm not saying that they're going to commit sexual acts on these kids, but it is predatory to do that type of behavior without parental consent or without even knowledge of the mm-hmm. parents.
It's obnoxious
Is it fair to say this is not an issue about transgenderism? This is an issue about who gets to raise my kid, me or some out-of-control elite collective.
Correct. Yeah, you're right on target there. I believe that this is cultural Marxism moving in to separate children from the family so that children see the state as the authority that they are being activists for. And it's obnoxious to think that there are so many parents in the state, in the nation, that are going to harm their child, abuse their child. And they're one of the things that's happening that we
it's,
see.
It's guilt before innocence.
Mm-hmm.
You are,
yes.
As a parent, you are guilty of being a hater. You're guilty of being an abuser. Mm-hmm. You're trying to coerce your kid to live a lifestyle that he or she shouldn't be living. Mm-hmm. You are that belligerent parent from the 1970s who found out his kid was gay and outcast him. That's who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And what's odd is I have a handicapped child, and I know what this is like. They can't give your kid a buffered aspirin. They can't give a child's aspirin. Mm-hmm. They can't put a Band-Aid on their knee without reporting to you exactly what happened, mm-hmm. and oftentimes without your express written permission. But yet, they can do this, including a bill just recently to say what you've named your child doesn't matter. What the state has doesn't matter. Your child wants to be called IP Freely, and they have to call her IP Freely.
Mm-hmm. Well, House Bill 24-1039, the non-legal name changes, really what it's going to do is codify current practices. So we know in the state of Colorado, multiple school districts, including Cherry Creek, Jeffco, Littleton Public Schools, have a practice of hiding gender transitions from the parents. So we've actually uncovered through Colorado Open Record Act's requests, which is similar to a Freedom of Information Act request, but it's just called a CORA here in the state. And we've actually uncovered the documents. We've uncovered trainings that are through Queer Endeavor, which is an organization put out by the University of Colorado, Queer Asterisk, Inside Out Youth Services. There's lots of money being spent on—
Who funds these groups?
The taxpayers are. So we're paying.
Who funds these groups?
Well, there's a lot of interesting money, and it all comes down from one big, ginormous entity, and it's called the Teachers Union.
You know, so it's like playing with the house's money in Vegas. These programs are largely funded by the state. There are some outside groups that do it, but they also get contracts from school districts and others. And so the system is racked up to say, parents, you don't get to know what your kid's doing. We know better because, well, we went to college for this stuff. Don't you know that? You idiot parents didn't go to college for this stuff. And so we know it's best for them, it's best for society to train them this way. I find it terrifying. I find it Orwellian. And I find it bizarre. But I want to be really clear. This is not about kids who want to be of a different gender. Mm-hmm. That's not the frickin' issue. Mm-hmm. But they will cloud it with that issue to make
you
seem like an evil person, and you're part of the moral majority, and you're out there waving your fist and trying to keep us back in the 50s. No. I believe in transparency in government. I believe that parents need to know what's going on. That you take your kid to the doctor's office, you're signing HIPAA waivers. Mm-hmm. You've got guardianship over this child, legal guardianship, and there is only one entity in the whole world that is immune from telling you what's going on with your kid. And that's the government. That's the government-run school district. Mm-hmm. Your doctors can't do it. The organizations you're with can't do it. Mm-hmm. They're out at camp. They can't do it. All those things are punishable by law if that happens.
But the practice is happening everywhere. It's happening in medicine. I just recently took both my kids for their annual well check, and I was asked to step out of the room. I had conversations with both of my children.
How old are your kids?
14 and 17. And
you were asked to step out of the room?
Correct. And I had—
Did you?
I did, because I had conversations with my children ahead of time because I knew this was going to happen. Both of my kids received a confidential survey that they were supposed to fill out without my knowledge. They were given that instruction by the receptionist at the front desk. This is for your eyes only. And I said, I'm going to look at all the questions before you answer them. And I, you know, my kids—
What were the questions?
They were— a lot of them were around, you know, healthy behaviors and things of that nature. But a lot of it did ultimately drive down to sex and gender ideology. And both my kids had two different doctors. So when my daughter went, she had a different doctor than the other one. And the doctor that my son had was very respectful of my role. And she really explained to my son, she said, you know, I'm going to give you the option, you know, I have to do this type of an exam. You can have your mom in here if you want, or she can step out, whatever you want. But I'm doing this because I'm a physician. No one else should be touching your body. And I'm only doing this if you say it's okay. And she did a really great job. She said, ultimately, you're going to go by your parents' morals. And then my daughter's doctor, very different experience. She was— you could tell that she was a little bit frustrated with me, with my questioning and rolling her eyes and whatnot.
But the dismissive, the elitist dismissive
thing. Yes, I know better.
That.
I know better. Let's—
You're just a parent.
I'm just a parent. And I am the expert. Every parent is the expert on their child. And if we have a parent that they're saying is neglectful or abusive, we have a system in place. It might be a failed system, but we have a system in place. And doctors, nurses, teachers are all mandatory reporters.
Stop there for a second. These people are mandatory reporters.
Absolutely.
What people don't get is if they suspect that you have abused their child, if you've abused your child or there's a mark on the child that shouldn't be there or something doesn't feel right, they are legally obligated to report this to Child Protective Services or the police or up a chain to make sure that the kid isn't being harmed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind this.
I'm a mandatory reporter. Oh, I just did it. I'm a mandatory reporter as a speech pathologist, and I have reported two situations to Child Protective Services in the last two decades.
But it doesn't work the other way. Mm-hmm. What if the mandatory reporter is, in fact, the abuser?
Right.
And here, I believe that's the case.
Absolutely.
When somebody says, don't tell your parents. Mm-hmm. When somebody says, if you're not comfortable in your body, you're trans. Mm-hmm. What kind of predatory crap is that? Mm-hmm. And who is the mandatory reporter on that person? Now, they don't see it that way. They will not see right. that as some sort of violation. But to tell a child that if you're uncomfortable in your body, mm-hmm. or if you're not 100, let me be clear, 100% comfortable in your own body, then you're trans, mm-hmm. That is a reportable offense to me. And for anybody to say, don't tell your parents, if a kid went to school and said, hey, teach, there's this guy who follows me after school and he talks to me about this weird stuff and he tells me I shouldn't tell my parents. What do you think that teacher would do? Mm-hmm. I believe, you're trained in this, I'm not, that would be a mandatory reporting, mm-hmm. that the teacher would have to tell somebody about mm-hmm. that. Am I wrong?
Yes, and the parent would likely be called in. Right. Immediately.
No, if it was just a stranger, let's say mm-hmm. it was a stranger mm-hmm. or a cousin who said, and they tell the teacher, my cousin is telling me this weird stuff, and she says, don't tell my parents. Mm-hmm. If you're supposed to report that, then why in the world, when a specialist says it, mm-hmm. That you're not supposed to report it? That is the Orwellian part of this.
And it's really interesting. I've had multiple conversations with teachers and district administrators in the state. And one interesting conversation that I had with the deputy superintendent of Cherry Creek Schools, her name is Jennifer Perry, back in March of 2022, I brought this concept up. I said, you know, I don't understand why there is this practice to hide this information from parents. And her comment to me was that she knew of at least 5 kids in just one elementary school alone that were transgender, and that she was not going to be monitoring whether they were changing their clothes in the bathroom and whatnot. And she just said, it's, you know, this has nothing to do with the school. And then I questioned her and I said, well, then why do you have confidential intra-district gender transition plans that state on the very first page, if the parent's not supportive, how are we going to support the student without notifying the parent? And there's an entire section on this is the child's preferred name. This is the child's pronouns. These are the facilities the child is going to be using, how they deal with overnight trips.
And which, then, as we found out in Jefferson County,
absolutely
is scary. For those who don't know, I forget how old the girl was told to 11. Sleep in the same bed with a boy, a biological boy, mm-hmm. and was freaked out and to the point where she called her parents. So the trauma caused to that kid, apparently we don't care about. We care right. more about the other child.
And that's one of the biggest issues that I have is I just can't understand why we're allowing one group of children to suffer for the mental well-being of another child. We're seeing so many girls that don't feel safe in school, don't feel safe going into female bathrooms when they are transgender girls are in that bathroom. And there's no hate or disregard for these children that are going through this experience with, you know, questioning their identity. But to not state that girls deserve a safe space. We have reports. We have an incident reporting tool on our website at coloradoparents.org, and we receive incident reports weekly from families across the state, multiple school districts. I have 14 incident reports open right now, and girls are reporting that they are not drinking water during the day because they don't want to have to go to the restroom.
I was going to say, why in the world? Because they don't want to have to urinate in a bathroom where there might be boys.
Right. And we have district administrators telling students that their hands are tied, that there's nothing they can do, and if the girl doesn't feel safe, she can use the nurse's room.
So in other words, the girl is being victimized.
Correct.
Because she doesn't matter because the system is there to help.
What about the girls? Right. What about the girls?
So talk to me a little bit about the legislation that's going through. Mm-hmm. So we talked about the unofficial name change, mm-hmm. which, as I said, if if you're smart, if you had a smart-ass kid like I was, mm-hmm. no, you'd be, you know.
There's a lot
I'd change my name to Amanda Hugginkiss.
Oh, I would have so much fun.
And they would have to do that, and they couldn't tell my parents. It would be there in the yearbook. Mm-hmm. It would be awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, and sometimes some kid is going to name himself school shooter, so it shows up on the yearbook.
There's so many loopholes with this bill 1039, and you know, it's under this guise of supporting students who are transgender, and the number of people that provided testimony during House committee hearing, there was so much emotional, logical testimony from people that are not in support of this bill, documenting the actual harm that's actually happening because these practices are already being employed. You know, I have incident reports that come in that would just break your heart from kids that are just socially awkward and having a tough time.
Let me hear one.
One is a young girl in middle school, really struggling socially, and was invited, you know, join the GSA, which is the Gay Straight Alliance Club, after school. Really started to be socially accepted in that group and celebrated. And she discovered that she thought she was transgender, and she was just thriving in this environment. The way she described it was that it was just this euphoria, where she was finally accepted, and she felt like she really belonged. But then what she said to us after, it got very serious. So she essentially was kind of dropped in the group. Now they were after additional kids to bring into the GSA, and she was back to being alone. And not only was she alone from this new group that was celebrating her not even 2 weeks ago, now she had done some changes at school and had guilt and shame about it. And nobody was there to guide her.
She had guilt and shame about what?
About making these decisions, about saying she was actually a boy and going by he, his, him pronouns.
She wanted to do that because she wanted to be accepted.
She wanted to fit in.
What a surprise. And because all of us at that age are tied into the social pressures. And if the social pressure says, this is how you get accepted.
Mm-hmm. And the sad thing was, his parents had no idea. And these children go home after school, and they spend hours at home, and they're there on the weekend. And the parents were starting to see severe depression, severe anxiety, and they found their daughter cutting herself. And they didn't know what was going on. They didn't understand. They couldn't guide her. They couldn't provide her with the resources necessary to stop her from harming herself.
Because the school wouldn't let her know.
Because the school hid it from the parents intentionally, because they thought they knew best. But
it used to be a liberal principle of openness, mm-hmm. of free speech. It used to be a liberal principle of transparency in government. It used to be a liberal, and I mean this in a classical way.
Classical liberalism,
That you have rights, and now the government supersedes those rights when it comes to the most vulnerable. And I keep hearing over and over again that a society is judged on how they treat their most vulnerable. And I know that the people pushing this really believe that they're helping the most vulnerable. They don't see that they could be hurting the most vulnerable. That's what I find so awful about this. During COVID, a lot of parents, myself included, got to finally see and hear what goes on in classrooms. Mm-hmm. My daughter told me about all the political correctness, all the environmental propaganda that goes on, all the racial propaganda that goes on, all, as you said, the oppression teaching. Listening in on her classes when they were online, mm-hmm. I got to hear about critical race theory and how systemic racism is bad in her English class, mm-hmm. in her science class, in a yoga class. I'm there listening to a yoga teacher mm-hmm. say how awful systemic racism is, and you white kids mm-hmm. are part of it. And every time I wanted to jump through that screen, she waved me off and said, I got to pass this class. Mm-hmm. But it's omnipresent. Did you find that COVID gave a lot of interest in what you're doing? Did parents finally see what's going on in classrooms when they would overhear it?
Absolutely. You know, so when I share the examples earlier of my children's experience that were the alarm bells for me, I started reaching out to other parents. And again, this was at a time in 2020, early 21, where we were divided. We weren't really sure if we should be talking to each other. And then there was also this societal pressure on racism and Black Lives Matter, George Floyd, defund the police, and nobody wanted to talk. And there was this huge component of cancel culture. So if you did speak out against it, you could be fired, you could get a bad grade, all of these different things. But more and more people were coming forward in whispered voices, right? So it wasn't, let's have a conversation the way you and I are right now. It was, oh God, yeah, I don't know what to do. I'm just gonna keep doing it. And we're all guilty of it. Every profession, we've seen it. Every profession that I know of has DEI uppercase training. And I think that's where we
not need. In Florida anymore.
Yes, you're right. But we as a society have just pushed through it. And we adults are modeling that for our children. I just have to do it. I just have to get through it. I just have to check the box.
I mean, think about this. I was told by so many signs at protests that dissent is patriotic. Mm-hmm. But if you dissent on this, it's not patriotic. Mm-hmm. You're a backwards person. Mm-hmm. You know, and as someone who is not a religious right guy, someone who is very pro-LGB, who wants gay marriage, all these things, mm-hmm. because I say you can't force people to speak a way that they don't want to speak, I'm the racist. Mm-hmm. I'm the hater, which is fine. Mm-hmm. We racists and haters, it just doesn't faze us anymore,
right?
Because it's lost its punch. I think a lot about Bud Light, mm-hmm. and that Bud Light lost 20% of its market share, mm-hmm. and they still haven't survived for something that seemed like a pretty small infraction. They make some cans and give it to this influencer on YouTube who's trans. You know, all right, that was a dumb decision, but the sin was this for the punishment that was that. And it took me a while to understand why the punishment was so big. Because it's pent-up frustration. In school, you can't speak up to this DEI silliness. Mm-hmm. You'd be shunned. You'd be out of school. You'd fail out of classes. At work, you have to go to endless HR meetings, and heaven forbid you misgender somebody because you're telling the truth and they don't like it. Mm-hmm. You could lose your job. So you cannot speak your truth. You cannot have your free speech. But when it comes to being in the supermarket and you're buying your six-pack of beer, that was the anonymous mm-hmm. vote. That was purely anonymous. It wasn't Mulvaney? It was that people were tired of it all over. And now I got to vote on it in private. Mm-hmm. And I won't lose my job for picking up Modelo or Coors instead of Bud Light.
Correct.
And look at the size of that. Mm-hmm. So I think people are scared to death to talk about the things that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. And I am not. And that's why I am running this organization and helping not only parents and students, but also teachers and staff. The number of teachers and staff that have signed up to be a part of the Colorado Parent Advocacy Network would astound people. And we receive
really?
Reports daily from teachers and staff and principals too. One of the things that I want people that might be watching this to know, if they do work in a school system and they do question the DEI initiatives or they feel that they shouldn't be hiding gender transitions from parents, they're not alone. A lot of people feel that way. It's a very small minority.
I've talked to parents and teachers too. There are mm-hmm. teachers like, no, this is crazy.
Yes.
But I am 2 years away from retiring.
And that's a big problem.
So let me ask you about, mm-hmm. about CPAN.
Mm-hmm.
So you take this information. Are you asking people to go to your website and give you more of these stories so you have a record of them, mm-hmm. an official record? What is it, if a parent or a teacher, this is striking a chord with them, what is it you'd like to do?
So the best
What thing, is it you want them to do?
The best thing you can do is just sign up at coloradoparents.org. You can get involved. You can submit an incident report. We even have an inequity reporting tool so that if you feel like your life, your liberty has somehow been jeopardized in an educational setting, that we will connect you with the right teams.
You say incident report. That sounds very professional mm-hmm. because my kid who's on has health care or has health issues, he has Down syndrome, and there are incident reports mm-hmm. all the time. If he scrapes his toe, there's an incident report.
Correct.
And it's written up. Mm-hmm. That's an official document.
Mm-hmm.
Are you guys an official document, or are you just taking stories? What is an incident report
for
you?
What we're doing is, so we're an all-volunteer organization at this point.
You are rolling in the money.
I wish I was, but we're doing great work. I mean, if you think about what we've accomplished, we celebrated our first birthday in November of 23.
Wow.
And we have done so much in this state to bring transparency and accountability to the school districts and to the legislature. And are really opening up the doors for people to get engaged and step into the public square and step into classrooms. And one of the things that we're encouraging people to do is get involved in local committees and boards and commissions. That is how we will shift culture to change what's currently happening in public schools. And just like you were saying earlier, your money speaks volumes, your feet speak volumes. So many families are leaving government schools. But I will let you know that we're getting incident reports from private schools, charter schools. So there
What you said about local government, at Independence Institute, Kathleen Chandler helps people find boards and commissions. People want to get involved. Mm-hmm. People need to get involved.
Absolutely.
There's one thing to sit on the sideline and just boil with anger mm-hmm. and do nothing, or save it for the cocktail party and then just yell about things. Mm-hmm. But to get on a local board, get on a local commission, get into the machinery of it, you see the inner workings. And when you do, one, you can make good things happen and stop bad things from happening, mm-hmm. but also you get information that you can give to people like you. Mm-hmm. And here's the firsthand document. And you have the power then to have the staff of government work on your behalf to answer these questions. Mm-hmm. It is remarkably powerful.
It
drives me nuts that all we do is talk about, is Trump going to be president? You know what? Talk about what goes on in your government, in your backyard.
Your community.
That's where one person mm-hmm. can change the world.
You can have such an impact. Because of Kathleen's class, I'm actually serve on the election commission in my city. And I think it's just an incredible opportunity to be engaged. And I think that's really where the failure is in our society today, is that we just have uneducated citizens that don't understand their role in local, state, and national government.
And they're intimidated.
Absolutely.
How is it not intimidating?
It is intimidating.
Kathleen's local government project, go to thinkfreedom.org and look for local government. Mm-hmm. That a little bit of hand-holding goes a long way. It's not hard. And once you get involved, that's powerful stuff. Mm-hmm. All right, so finish the question. What else do you want what do you want from the people of Colorado? Mm-hmm. What do you want from elected officials?
We want the people of Colorado to know that they have a support system in place to help them know what to do when a situation happens to their child, at their job, if it's in an education setting. And we want the support of the people. We want the Colorado Parent Advocacy Network to serve decades long in this state to ensure that district administrations, the boards of ed, that should be held accountable to their constituents, but there's no method in place. And the same with all these government-run programs, like the iMatter program. These are contracted out to third parties. There's no
transparency.
There's no oversight. There's no accountability. We're talking about millions and millions of dollars being spent on programs
We're talking about hundreds of thousands of children.
We are. We're talking about the most vulnerable people in our society and the future of our country. The future of our America is at stake right now because of what is happening in our schools. And all of these things, all of these issues, DEI, LGBT+, oppressor-oppressed, all these different things, they're fires. And it's just making, we have to put the fires out, but it's blocking our vision from what's truly happening.
The other part, which was so frustrating for me during COVID when they shut down education, my son regressed because he can't learn online. He needs to be engaged with people. But the people that get hurt are the most vulnerable.
Absolutely.
Always and always and always. And you only have one shot.
Mm-hmm.
You might have some time to change monetary policy. All right. But you only have one shot with your kid. Mm-hmm. And we are sending them into a lion's den every day, and we don't know what goes on.
Absolutely. That's the best way to describe it. You really are. You cannot have blind trust in the system.
People want to get involved. Where do they go?
ColoradoParents.org.
and you have a newsletter. What if parents want to give you some information, but they also feel a little nervous about giving you that information? Mm-hmm. They want to be anonymous.
So the way that we require incident reporting tools is that people need to sign an affidavit that what they're saying is true. They do need to provide their contact information. We verify every incident report that comes in through CORA requests, the Colorado Open Records Act. And we actually have had great success in many, many incidences in terms of just following the proper steps of policy for a school district. So, you know, our goal is never to just bring this out in social media and roll right. in it. We always follow the proper protocol.
I assume, though, if somebody works in a school district and says, you really ought to look at policy number 38, subsection C, they could probably tell you that anonymously.
Yes, absolutely. You can submit tips, and we can investigate if we have the correct information in an incident report.
Do that website one more time.
It's coloradoparents.org.
The work you're doing is critically important. It
Thank
takes
you.
Brave people to do what you do.
Thank you.
If you've enjoyed this episode of Devil's Advocate, I hope you'll share it with a friend, and I hope you'll subscribe and follow the show. We have new ones released weekly. Remember, this audio was taken from our TV show. To watch it, just search the letters IITV for Independence Institute TV on YouTube for this and many other great conversations.